people do not want to stay in an organization that they don't feel that you can be yourself, or that you can bring the parts to work about yourself that are important to you. People don't want to work there now. People don't want to work somewhere where they feel like I will reach a barrier before I've even become a manager.
Welcome to Be More, a podcast by Peakon. This is where everyone at an organization can hear different and meaningful perspectives on how we can all thrive in this ever-changing and constantly evolving world of work. I'm your host, Patrick Cornoyer. When I ask people what they love about their environment that they work in, the common theme in the response is when a person can just be themselves at work. Whether it's the ability to show their quirkiness, to share their passions outside of work, or just to openly discuss what they believe in, the core theme is that an environment of inclusion is not only expected from employees, it's absolutely necessary for a business to succeed. Joining me today is my colleague, Cherie Atchison. Cherie is Peakon's Global Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. She's one of the UK's top most influential women in tech. She's won numerous awards for her work with diversity and inclusion, and she's in the process of writing a book, which is titled Demanding More. It will help everyone be the change that is needed in creating a more inclusive society and workplace. Cherie, I have been looking forward to this conversation for the past week. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a ton that we can talk about. And I think a great place for us to start is understanding a bit around your inspiration. So what inspired you to build your career in diversity and inclusion work?
I think there's an important point around, I guess, me as a person there. So I am a woman of color. You can probably tell by my accent, I am Irish. And I was adopted when I was 3 weeks old from Sri Lanka by an Irish family. So I grew up in a space that was very, very white. Now, people very regularly talk about being the only in their workplace or in leadership rooms. But I want people to think about being the only in your entire life. I mean, when you go to family events and you're the only brown face, with the exception of my brother, who is also adopted, when you see friends, etc., when you have school photos and you're the only brown face in the entire photo. So it was always really easy to spot us, but it changes how you are viewed in the world, but also how you view the world. And certainly growing up in Ireland, which is still a privilege for sure, gave me a perspective that most Irish people will obviously not have. Now, I have a computer science degree and I was a software engineer. And I guess, you know, I love being the only that much that I decided to make my career in it. And I just wasn't okay with how exclusionary the industry was. I wasn't okay with the fact that there wasn't very many women around me, very many people of color, and so on. And I wanted to do something about it. And I pivoted in using the skills that I have from being very technically minded and using the principles that you would when you create a software solution to create inclusion strategies. Because again, we are very much needing to put, you know, the same, or taking the same problems that people face, but put different lenses on them so we can solve for problems. And inclusion and software very much, you know, are linked in that way. And I just simply wanted to leave things better than I found them.
That's amazing. The idea of wanting to leave things better than you found them is definitely inspiration to drive forward a career in an area that just needs a lot of attention by not only business, but just by people and employees in business. And this concept of focusing on diversity and inclusion strategy at businesses, process, programs, all of it is everyone's responsibility, right, at an organization. And we all have the opportunity to be a part of that. So knowing that you've had this inspiration and this desire to help organizations change and to build a better future, what do you think the business benefits are for organizations to have a specific focus on creating a more diverse workforce?
Yeah, I think the reason why this is all incredibly important is because ultimately we are rolling out solutions, whether it's technology focused, medicine focused, etc., for society. Now, society is not one homogeneous group. Society is not one subset of society in itself. And therefore, how could you possibly say that you can make a solution for everyone without having appropriate representation or experiences and perspectives being heard? Now, we know that organizations embracing diversity and fostering environments of inclusion have better business benefits. So, for example, an inclusive organization is twice as likely to exceed financial targets, three times as likely to be high performing, six times more likely to be agile and innovative, and eight times more likely to achieve better business outcomes. Now, we know the research behind this. We've seen it from Deloitte and McKinsey and so on. But the reasons that this is happening is because we get improved creativity when we bring different people in addressing one issue or one problem or one solution. We get very different perspectives on what that means. And the point is, when we bring these different people in and they are appropriately listened to, and we'll talk about what appropriately listening to someone actually means, we get different insights that we simply just will not get. We remove that echo chamber that, you know, exists in all of our lives. Like, people should think about the people that they spend all of their time with. Maybe not right now, because we're not spending time with anyone outside of our bubble. But in the normal world, what are all of your friends like? Where are they all from? Do they all have similar backgrounds to you? Has that created a view of the world that maybe is quite biased and potentially exclusionary? Now, the answer to that is likely yes, myself included, because you have to push yourself outside of those bubbles because it gives you insights that you simply won't have.
You talk about this concept of exclusion, and I definitely want to come back to that because I think that's an important point in this idea. You recently wrote an article with Forbes and talked about embracing inclusion means that we need to understand exclusion and to be honest with ourselves around the concept of exclusion. But let's get to that in just a minute. So we're talking about diversity and inclusion. And I think the two terms or the two words are both extremely powerful, but I also think that there's a bit of challenge sometimes of understanding what the difference is, if there is a difference, or how they work together. And you've been really excellent about explaining this in a very concise way. So could you just give your perspective on, I want to say, the difference between diversity and inclusion, but how the two work together?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important for people to understand as well what it means to them, because very often diversity and inclusion will mean so many things to different people, but your organization should certainly have a consistent way of talking about this that brings together those different kinds of flavors. Now, for me, diversity is very much about the representation you have from different demographics, looking specifically at underrepresented groups in comparison to the majority demographics that you have in your organization. Inclusion is very much about, do you have processes, policies, environments, communities, etc., in place that allow those people to thrive? You can't have one without the other. Now, I know I say this all the time and people are sick of hearing me say it, but diversity without inclusion is fruitless. But what is even more fruitless is measuring diversity and not measuring inclusion. Now, for me, this is the reason why I came to Peakon, because I'm incredibly strict with that when it comes to any strategy that I make, that it's not good enough to, for example, measure your demographics or talk about the great representation you maybe have in your demographic data. You also have to understand, how are those people getting on in your business? Are they being promoted fairly? Do they see hiring as an equitable process? Do they feel like they can bring their whole selves to work? And if they can't, what are you doing about it? So the two things work hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Otherwise, you're not really doing this work in the way it should be done.
That's a great, concise way of helping people understand how diversity and inclusion work together. But as you said, the importance of understanding both and measuring both. And I like this focus when we talk about inclusion around environment and creating this or striving to create an environment where people can bring their full selves to work. And as I was mentioning before, ultimately, that's people feel really good when they can just be themselves. And they're not worried about having to put on a facade or act a certain way, speak a certain way, share thoughts in a certain way. And that just, we all know, that just feels good.
Yeah.
So what do you think happens when an organization doesn't focus on inclusion? I think a lot of organizations are focusing quite a bit on diversity, but to your point, maybe are not focusing so much on inclusion or measuring if their strategy or their initiatives around inclusion are working. What happens when inclusion ends up not being a focus at a business?
People leave. People do not want to stay in an organization that they don't feel, like you've mentioned, that you can be yourself or that you can bring the parts to work about yourself that are important to you. People don't want to work there now. People don't want to work somewhere where they feel like I will reach a barrier before I've even become a manager. Now, what's important in that is also remembering the intersectionality of inclusion here. For some people, there are glass ceilings, but for other people, there are cement roofs. Now, you have to absolutely understand that. You have to absolutely, again, I know I talk about data all the time, but your data is so important here. Taking, for example, that diversity data and putting it across your promotion processes, your probation processes, your grievance process, and actually making understanding that from an inclusion perspective, the two things are connected. And when you don't do that, what you see is people leaving. What you also see is people from underrepresented backgrounds coming into your business, thinking that it's going to be great because they see your diversity stats. They come in, they have a really poor experience, engagement goes down, they are disengaged, they're unhappy, they're unfulfilled and undervalued. And they either stay there and continue to resent because they're not feeling like anything's changing for them, or they leave. And either of those scenarios are obviously very, very bad. So we need to do both. You can't do one without the other. And, you know, we just shared our first ever DE&I report for PCON yesterday, which I was super excited to get out. And we've shared our data. We know we don't have the best demographic representation at PCON, but we're sharing that. We're also sharing our inclusion data where we can, because we are just over 250-ish people, where we can protect employee and anonymity, but still sharing what we can around the different perspectives of what it means to work at PCON, with the view that that embeds accountability, not just internally, but externally, and actually using those inclusion scores to measure our progress over the next 15 months whilst we embed our data in different ways too, so we can set aspirational targets and so on. So the two things work hand in hand, and you know, you can't measure one without the other. If you are doing that, again, you're just not doing this in the right way.
So in this article that you just wrote with Forbes,
yes,
it very much resonated. I obviously just read it a couple of days ago when you released it, and it's so spot on talking about this idea of exclusion, or really being honest, not only with ourselves, but organizations being honest with themselves about exclusion. Can you tell us a bit about that and recap your thoughts on that? Because I think that is very important for people to hear around how to truly have a meaningful and impactful inclusion strategy. We have to understand exclusion.
Yeah. And I guess the context around that article, so I tried to write for Forbes sort of every month or so, but I woke up and I was just really frustrated. I was really frustrated that I kept seeing people posting things around running unconscious bias workshops or allyship trainings, etc., but never actually talking about why we need those things, or talking about unconscious bias as opposed to just bias, or accidental racism, which is just racism. And the problem I have with that is it takes ownership off of humans. It takes ownership off of the fact that we have gotten into the position where people in the roles like I am in and other people are having to do these different measures to rework and demolish the things that people have done. People have caused us to get to the position that we are in now. And what's really important here is exclusion and discrimination for decades and decades and decades has been purposeful and deliberately executed. So therefore, our inclusion must be purposeful and deliberately executed to counteract that. You cannot just think that inclusion will just happen because you have lots of nice people in your business. Nice is not the same as being anti-racist, anti-sexist, anti-homophobic, and so on and so forth. And my point is, any of those trainings that I run, and I run bias trainings, I run allyship trainings and privilege awareness and so on, but at the start of every session and threaded throughout it is stats and painting the picture of how we have gotten into this position, how, you know, homeowners that are Black in America are treated statistically different, how you can still be killed for being a member of the LGBT plus community in lots of different countries, how London, for example, doesn't have accessible train stations for everyone, which means disabled people cannot travel in the way I can just get on a train and go where I want. And that's not okay. But if we don't provide that education and awareness, then what we're really doing is taking a gaping wound and putting a sticky plaster on it. And, you know, I don't play that game. So
it's a great article for those listeners. Take a look at the Forbes article because it's a very good read. And as you said, people are the center of all of this. And all of us need to really think about how we are, who we are, how we present ourselves. It just, it's all of us making a specific conscious effort to get better at this. You mentioned this concept of racism and anti-racism, and that's a very, very important topic right now. Obviously, there's quite a few movements that the societies have been experiencing, especially in the United States right now. There's quite a bit going on. How can organizations, and this is maybe something that has been a bit of a, maybe avoided the, it can be a tough topic to talk about, mm-hmm. especially for business.
Yeah.
This concept of embracing anti-racism, the word racism, mm-hmm. is a, in some ways, a heavy word, and it's, people are scared of it. Businesses can also be fearful of saying the right thing, doing mm-hmm. the right thing in this area. How do you suggest businesses go about starting to embrace and be comfortable with talking about anti-racism?
I think firstly that businesses are uncomfortable with racism for the most part because most people in senior leadership are white. And it is a challenge because it makes you sit back and actually not view your whiteness as default, because it is in the world, in leadership positions, and sort of in my level and above, whiteness is a default. And whiteness, when we see it on TV represented in the best way, on books and in the media, when we consume that, it's almost like it's not viewed as anything because it's just always there. But with racism, you have to confront that means that you have a huge amount of privilege. Now, people get very uncomfortable when we talk about privilege because it means shining a light on something that means that you have had it easier. Now, that does not mean that your life has been easy. It just very simply means your skin color hasn't been something that's made it more difficult. Now, what I suggest to businesses is to really and genuinely understand the history. And I think it's really important that people understand the history of racism and the different bits and pieces that I've touched on, because it's very easy to think that racism is just, for example, saying like the N-word or saying a racial slur or actively saying, oh, I'm not hiring that person because they're Black. But yes, those are obviously racist things to do, but it's much more nuanced than that now as well. We've seen that racism is becoming more subtle and overt, but that doesn't mean that it's not still racism. And what I think is important to get to the stage of understanding how, for example, racism can be very subtle nowadays, is understanding the sheer brutality of it not even that long ago. Like, there are people's grandparents that have witnessed some intense racism, and it's still going on in the world. We can see what's happening in the world every day on the news. And what I think is important is when you get that education and awareness, is really genuinely understanding how you personally, firstly, can make a difference in that space. What is it that you can do as, for example, maybe a white person, as a non-Black person, and so on, to really make a difference with the power or privilege that you do have? And then utilizing your business, if you're able to do that, for good. And I think that's a really important point here. We have seen so many organizations put their weight behind anti-racism in the past sort of 6 months-ish. And that has meant that we're seeing it become more and more mainstream, which is what we need. We need people, not just in, you know, senior leadership positions like us, to be talking about this. We need our families to talk about it. We need, like, my dad back home, who's 70, to talk about this. Because again, the point even is people think they're not racist because they've maybe adopted brown children, or they don't say the N-word. And that's simply not the case. I can be racist against black people. And I have to make sure that the things that I do, I'm actively being anti-racist, that I'm actively supporting those different communities, doing what I can in the roles that I'm in, and also personally to help people from those different communities if they want that help.
That is very helpful perspective for not just businesses, but just for all of us to truly think about that. And there was a topic that you brought up at the start of the conversation that I do want to come back to, which is around appropriate listening, what that means, and how organizations can appropriately listen to their employees, but the groups within their teams. And there's our organizations, and the people in our organizations make up the fabric of our culture. And empowering that voice, it's so meaningful, but it's also needed. And quite frankly, it's expected for employees to be able to have their voice heard.
Yeah.
So talk to us a bit around appropriately listening and empowering employees' voice at organizations.
Yeah. And I talk about this quite a lot because I think it's really important when you talk about diversity on one side and inclusion on the other side versus diversity and inclusion as one thing. How I see appropriately listening versus facetious listening is you can bring all of the different kinds of people from all different backgrounds into your business as much as you want to. However, if those people even sit at the leadership table and they are not listened to, or somebody says something, it goes in one ear and out the other, they're not at the right decision-making tables, then what was the purpose? There was no purpose other than to tokenize people. Now, appropriately listening versus facetiously listening means that you are actively spending the time hearing what that person is saying. You are not listening just to wait for your turn to speak. You're actively listening, digesting, taking the time to analyze what the person's saying, and not just waiting for your turn to give a rebuttal on what was previously said, because that's not inclusive. Because what you're actively doing is saying, I'm not listening, I don't care, I want to speak. And the difference in that is that when you do properly and appropriately listen, you get all of the benefits I mentioned at the start. You get those different perspectives, you get those insights, and you get those challenges that we need. And what I suggest that people do is intelligent listening is incredibly important here. And doing that at scale is incredibly important for all of the business. So if we're talking about the entire business, you need a tool, you need a solution like Peakon that allows you to do that, because it's obviously unrealistic to be able to do that face to face all of the time. Now, when we're talking about leadership meetings, for example, and senior leadership meetings, what's really important here is that this is talked about amongst that group, that at the start of the sessions or the start of every meeting, that the facilitator makes a point of saying that we all need to properly listen to each other, that we need to give each other the space and time to answer. And then as well, the people with privilege in that room, which is likely everyone, because being in leadership is one of the biggest privileges you can have, is that when you see that someone isn't being listened to, that you actively call it out, or that you ask them again, I'm interested in what you're saying. Can you please say that again? Because I know someone might have missed it. And using that as a way to really shift that narrative. People, I don't think, realize the power that one other person saying something about what's happening can have. People don't realize that me saying, well, actually, why are you talking to that person in that way? And I do it all the time. It probably makes people really uncomfortable, but I'm okay with that. Because I have the privilege to do so. I don't have, like, any, I guess, any worries as a senior leader around, you know, what would happen to me if I speak up. And that's certainly encouraged amongst all of us at Peakon. But in other businesses, maybe it's not. And I think that's where privileged leaders need to be the person to say, well, actually, should we say that point first? Let's hear her perspectives. Or, you know, well, you interrupted that person and I'd like to hear what they're saying. So I think it's really important to understand, you know, the scalable solutions alongside the personal interventions that we can all do.
I join you in this passion of creating a world where listening is not just waiting for your turn to speak. I think that is articulated incredibly well. And I think we all need to think about that, because that is not what active listening is. That's not what appropriate listening is. And that is an inspirational way of looking at how we can just all get better at truly appropriately listening through our organizations, just in one-on-one conversations with people. It's not about waiting for your turn to speak. So I really like that a lot. Cherie, we could talk for hours about this, but we do have to wrap up the episode. First, I just want to thank you for sharing your passion with the world and with the audience, for sharing with us your journey and what inspired you to originally get into the work with diversity and inclusion. Thank you for providing some tangible perspectives, not only for organizations, but just for people and the listeners in general. And honestly, just thanks for being you. I've enjoyed the journey that we've started on. I appreciate you taking the time to join the conversation today. And thank you for just being an inspiration to all of us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
And that was Be More, a podcast by Peakon. Be sure to search for Be More in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or anywhere else that you get your podcasts from. And go ahead and subscribe so that you don't miss out on any future conversations. On behalf of the team here at Peakon, thanks for listening.